You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closures of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Program Advisory Committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening, and welcome to Labor Radio, of the working class, by the working class, and for the working class. I'm your host, Stephen Siegel, here with co-host Rachel Haynes. Hey, Rachel. We are broadcasting around the world from Portland, Oregon. Both of us are public school teachers, and we host every second Monday of the month, where we typically interview educators and talk about what's going on in their schools and in their unions. And joining us today in the Zoom, we have Amy Sylvia, Greg Myers, and Veronica Green. Welcome to all three of you.
Thank you.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Yes. And I'll just state right out front that when I talk about educators, I'm not just talking about teachers. Anybody who works in the school, in my mind, is an educator and plays a role in educating our children, our students, when they're in school. So if each of you three could start by just telling us about your job positions, where you work, and for how long you've been doing this work.
Well, I'll start. I'm Amy Sylvia. I'm a lunch lady. My official title is Nutrition Services Food Service Lead. So I run my kitchen. It's just me. I've been with the district. I'm just starting my ninth year.
My name is Greg Myers, and I am the head custodian at Jackson Middle School in Portland Public School District. I've been with the district for, I guess we count this year as a year. This was my 15th year. So we'll be 16 starting in the fall. And I've been head custodian from elementary schools all the way up to high school.
And I'm Veronica Green. And like Amy, I am a lunch lady at Creative Science School. And I've been there only for 3 years, not as long as these two.
Great. Great. Well, it's great to have you all. Would you tell us more about the kinds of responsibilities that you have as a custodian, or I'm going to refer to you as nutrition services workers?
Go ahead, Amy, you start.
Sure. Our responsibilities we have to order food, take inventory. We do a lot of food prep, and then we have to bag it all up and distribute it to kids. Right now during the pandemic, it's a little bit different, but that's basically our normal. We get the food, make the food, serve the food.
Great.
Let's see. The title, our job description as custodians of a Portland public school is to make sure that the buildings are maintained clean and safe. So that's a nutshell. Basically, our job falls into anything that anybody needs in the building. As long as it's something that we can take care of without having to call out facilities, we take care of everything from obviously spills, broken things. If a teacher needs something, the administrator, we have a radio that we answer to the entire time of the day. We unlock the building, turn the lights on, and we lock the building and turn the lights off at the end of the day.
Great. You know, I'll add to that just a little bit to what Amy said. Pre-pandemic, I want to say that we also do a lot of kid management, at least in my kitchen. Sometimes I could have up to 8 student helpers, and so that's a lot to manage while you're trying to serve food and, you know, put numbers in and stuff. So, but it's also my favorite part.
Yes, great. And Amy, you sort of hinted at this, but talk about the kinds of challenges that you've been facing on your job. Just normal kind of challenges, I guess I would say. So let's back up. Just
like pre-pandemic challenge.
Yeah.
Communication is always a challenge. We have different managers that have so many schools for each manager, and sometimes different managers tell different stories. We don't always get the same information or ideas or direction from different managers. So I get told one thing, Veronica gets told a totally different thing. So communication, I feel like, is a pretty big challenge. Just trying to get our work done in the amount of time that we're allotted is also, I usually feel like my days are about 3 minutes long, even though it's like a full 8-hour shift. I'm just running the whole time. So just trying to get stuff done in the time allotted.
You know, and I'll also say, I mean, what Amy says is absolutely correct. But the biggest challenge for me personally is, it goes along with that. I mean, I feel like they're giving us less time, but having us do more work. When I was hired as the lead about a year ago, they took my assistant away as soon as I was hired on. So the same kitchen that had 2 people for 20 years or so now had 1 person, me, and a lot more things that they expect me to do. And I actually asked my manager last year, she came in to do a time study on me. And basically I said, so you want me to lower my standards because I really care about the food and how it looks and how it tastes, because some kids, this is the only meals they're getting. And she said, well, yeah, not so many words, but yes. So that's challenging for me, for sure.
Can I ask if that is a change across the district of having only one person work in the kitchen? Is that more common?
You know, I don't really know. Amy's been here longer, maybe she would know, but I do know that Nutrition Services has some sort of formula that they plug all of our numbers into, how many kids we're getting for breakfast and lunch and whatnot, and it's determined by that. But it's interesting to me, like I said, being at a school for so long, and the lead before that always had an assistant, no one said anything to her, and then the newbie comes in and it changed.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Greg? Normally, what kinds of things are you challenged with?
For the custodial staff of the Portland Public Schools, I can tell you the number one overriding challenge is manpower. We have been short-staffed in manpower for basically the last 20 years. I don't know if anybody goes back far enough to know, but there was a time when all of the PPS union custodians were laid off for about a period of 4 years, laid off, fired, however you want to put it. And replaced with a contracting company. Well, the union fought their way all the way to the Oregon Supreme Court and won their case, had their jobs reinstated. But after 4 years, a lot of those people had moved on. So roughly the best number we could come up with was when the custodians were laid off 20 years ago, there was about 445 custodians for roughly 100 buildings. When they won their case and came back 4 years later, roughly half of them came back because others had moved on to other jobs. So they started back with about 200-ish, and they hired roughly about 100, 120. I was in that group. That's when I started, 15 years ago when they came back. And the number stayed right at that. The district basically told us there was no money in the budget to hire more custodians back. Basically, the main thing they told us, which we were amazed, was they told us we were overpaid. we were the highest paid custodians in all of the, you know, they'd done a comparative to all the other districts, and we were getting paid more than all of the other relative school districts. Granted, we're the biggest school district out of all of them that they did this comparison in. So the option for us was either take a pay cut, or this is the only amount of custodians that we can afford to pay. So we came back with roughly 100 something less, 120 less custodians than they had the before the 4 years. And that number stayed pretty steady up until about the last 5 years ago. There, you know, we would maybe get two, three, that they'd budget us for two or three more full-time people a year. But which really didn't make any difference because our attrition rate is very high depending on the economy. If the economy is good, we have a hard time getting people to come work for us. If the economy is bad, they'll come knocking at the door all day long. So our numbers fluctuate massively. At our lowest point, I would say it was probably about 4 years ago. We were roughly at 160 custodians. So you have roughly, and I know because I was a head custodian, I was trying to manage a building with, you know, sort of like what the what Amy and Veronica are saying. You know, normally this building has three people in it. Well, we don't have three people, so you have two people. Just make do your best. And that's kind of what's been going on basically for the last 15 years. They robbed Peter to pay Paul on a nightly basis. And because of that, the conditions inside of our building, the cleanliness and the safety of the buildings has deteriorated because you just physically cannot maintain a building of however many square feet with a third, a quarter of the people that were, the building was originally built to make. I mean, the buildings haven't gotten any smaller. They're still the same size. And at one point, honestly, when I started, I worked with people that had been there for 30 years. At one point, the school district had upwards of 600 custodians to maintain the same amount of buildings. Actually, we've added buildings because we built some new schools. You know, sort of like what the Veronica and Amy are saying, I'll echo the same thing. They're asking us to do the same job in the same space with less amount of people and manpower, and they expect us to, you know, maintain the levels, which it's just physically impossible to do. And now spotlighted in the pandemic, when we're now going to be required to not only clean, but, and, you know, meet guidelines by the Oregon Department of Education and the CDC, this has really put pressure on, you know, you can't fake cleaning. You can't, you know, you have to have a body to wipe a desk down. It won't wipe itself down. So we're kind of in a crunch. The district has allotted us to hire 30 more custodians. We have not gotten a statement from them if that's going to be permanent or if they're just there until the emergency is lifted by the governor. So we're, our end of it, we're trying to push the school board to fund more money to facilities budget so we can hire permanently more full-time union custodians.
And Amy or Veronica, Gray kind of led right into current challenges under the pandemic. Anything that you want to mention that's different right now for you? It's more challenging?
Everything's different because we don't have kids in the building. We're basically, I feel like we're just a factory assembly line, just making sack lunches, just doing this all day. I call it my sack lunch shoulder because my stuff in bags all day. And it's hard because there's so many different changes, so many happening so fast that it'll be like, well, tomorrow you're going to do this, but we don't know what this is yet. We'll tell you tomorrow. It's just like not having a lot of information, but in a timely manner. And it's a lot different. It's sad not seeing the kids. I just feel like it's a lot more work, and it's not so fun anymore.
Yeah. You know, for me, it's been a little, I have a different experience this year because I'm starting in January, I took a leave of absence because I have a 9-year-old and a 13-year-old, and they really were struggling without a parent at home, you know, because of distance learning. But the first half of the school year I worked, and it was very challenging. It was even scary at sometimes knowing that we were exposed, you know, to the virus, and not knowing, you know, every day just had new challenges we weren't expecting. So,
Just being out on the front lines since the pandemic started. I mean, we've worked through winter break. We worked through, you know, like we did big things for winter break and spring break, and we've been interacting with people, you know, going to their windows to give them their food. And
it's you guys just also worked through the fire too, when nobody else was working. Right. You guys worked during the fires. You were the only ones. Oh, that's when you guys were it.
Yeah.
Well, and also I think for me, the most challenging part was when the pandemic first hit, you know, what was it, right after March 13th or so, I was put over at Harrison Park because that was a grab and go site. And no one knew what was going on. I mean, at that point, nobody did, but it was scary a few times, not knowing enough about the virus, people coming without masks. We were working without masks for a few weeks, at least the kitchen I was at, because we didn't know yet that was, you know, our going to be the biggest help. So, it was.
Well, at first they said scary. First they said we couldn't wear masks because they didn't want people to think that we were sick.
That's right.
And then once it got declared that you need to wear masks, then we were allowed to wear masks.
Wow. Well, we invited you all on to talk about your contract campaign. So if you could share what union you're a part of and whether you hold any position in your union, and then we'll get to talking a little bit more about your demands.
Sure. We're the SEIU 503 Local 140, and I am the co-chair for Nutrition Services.
I
do not.
I am the representative at large for the custodial side of the SE 503. So
I do not hold a position.
Thank you, Kyle. Yes. I would love to hear more about the demands of things that you're fighting for in your contract. And I know, Greg, you alluded to the 30 custodians that have been hired and wanting, pressing for those to be permanent hires. What are some other things that y'all are fighting for?
Those 30 custodians have been allocated. We've not physically hired them yet. They just gave us the green light to hire. Our hiring process is not fast because of background checks, and you know, it's a slow process. So to get, you know, to get people on the floor of a school and actually have them trained, you're looking at a 2-2.5 week process. So it's not, we can't do it overnight. For custodial side of it, ours basically is come down to, one was communication, which we have kind of resolved with the district, but the main one for ours is, which this has always been a problem, like I said, this is not something that just snuck up during the pandemic. There's just never been enough money put aside in the budget from the school board for us to keep escalating our levels of custodians that we can build a foundation on of permanent custodians. Like I said, we do have a high attrition rate. So hiring one and two people at a time, it's like one step up and two steps back. You know, we go to every year when we bargain, or every contract when we bargain, that's one of the things that we ask for, is more budget so we can hire more full-time union custodians, because it's the only way we get stability. And in the last few years, it's been very unstable. People come, people go. It's been a sort of real revolving door. And part of it is because full-time custodians, after a period of time, are given full benefits. We have a very, very good benefit package that the district offers us. We used to have part-time custodians, and they at one point were offered partial benefits. They were given some incentives to work for us in the hopes that someday that they would actually be able to become full-time custodians. we haven't had part-time custodians for a very long time. The job is just not something anybody wants to do. One was because of the pay level. Two, there was no incentive for them to do that job part-time. So basically our end of it, the nutrition services has been given the short end of the stick during this pandemic, far worse than we have. Ours basically is the same. We've been asking for this for a long time. It's just, it's finally come to the spotlight because of we're actually having to follow guidelines that come from somebody other than the school district. So what we're asking for is anybody that hears this, please contact the Portland Public School Board and ask them to, in their budget, a lot more money. So on a regular basis, annual basis, so we can keep building our standard full-time union custodian staff, so we can get up to the levels that we'd like to get up to, a level of cleanliness in our building that isn't moderately dingy. That's where we're at. So we'd like to get to level three or level two, but it's physically impossible without the manpower to do it. So yes, call the school board, tell them to give more money to facilities so we can hire more custodians, so your kids' schools will be clean and safe, cleaner and safer. How's that? We're already doing our best to be clean and safe, but cleaner and safer. That's it for us. But the girls, the ladies, they've got a lot more issues to talk about.
Well, I first want to just clarify that this is not our general contracting bargaining. This is just a one time because of COVID, weird stuff has happened. So it's just a smaller sort of bargaining. We asked for masks because the governor had said employees need to supply masks. We went back and forth on that for a long time. They said, you're supposed to be wearing a mask. You should already have masks. We don't need to give you masks. We finally got them to supply us. We each get 5 reusable masks. We got those recently. We asked for better communication, like clear communication, and we said let's make it like every 2 weeks we need some sort of communication about what's happening, what are the changes, what's going on. And again, it took them kind of a long time to agree to give us communication, which seems silly to me, but they have agreed to that. We asked for heat and shelter, warm heat and shelter, and stable shelter, and they agreed to shelter. Each site has like a canopy tent with one side, and we asked they did let us, if we could find a place inside the building to serve, like from a doorway, that we could be inside. But there's still sites that are outside. When it's raining, when it's snowing, when it's cold, when it's 100 degrees, when the smoke has filled the air because of forest fires, we're still outside. We finally agreed last week that our big boss, Whitney, will go around to the different sites to make sure that people have adequate shelter for the weather. So we're slowly getting there. Our big ask is for hazard pay. We are the only group that did not have our hours guaranteed. So a lot of what they say is nobody's hours were cut because they kept they didn't change our written words, but I can show you pay stubs of people who used to work 40 hours and now work 20 hours. So to me, that I would consider that a pay cut.
Yes.
Or a reduction in hours, which in turn means you're getting less money. So and Portland Public Schools is real big on equity, and so we are trying to say we deserve that pay difference, that because everybody else was guaranteed their hours, whether if they worked them or didn't work them. And so we're asking for $1,500, which we based on if we would have stayed in the work share program, that would have been the like the extra $300 a month or whatever from the work share program. So, I mean, technically we could be asking for a lot more of give us the same amount of money for all the hours that we should have worked. So I feel like the $1,500 isn't really that big of an amount. It's actually, it's 1/3 of 1% of what PPS is gonna get from the COVID relief. So I don't think that's a lot to ask for, so.
Well, especially, real quick, especially because I don't know if you mentioned this already, Amy, but we're the lowest paid people in jobs in PPS. And one of the hardest working, you know, and for me, they took away my benefits when I went on leave, you know, because I'm on leave, so I don't get them anymore. But taking them away during a pandemic, you know, throw me a bone, give me $1,500 to put towards some health insurance for my family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Wow, time is flying by. We just have about 5 minutes and we have lots of questions. I don't know what happened to time here. I do want to ask though, because I know you've been up to some things. I've seen rallies. I know that. So talk about what you've been doing to raise awareness with the public.
We're speaking at the board meetings. We, like you said, have had some rallies on Thursday. Today is Friday. Thursday we did a picket in front of Beaumont School, just, you know, showing people signs. We've handed out flyers at school. We've written to the board, the school board. We're sharing stuff on social media. We're just trying to keep pushing, keeping up the pressure to have our voices heard.
Great.
And so in these last few minutes, we would love to know just really quickly, what are some upcoming actions and things that people can do to support? I know Greg said write the school board. Do you have any more rallies coming up?
Monday, we're going to picket outside of Cleveland High School and Vestal, just to let people know that we're here, we want to be heard. We're trying to get more flyers out to schools. We have buttons.
Oh yeah, we're getting buttons at our building. Yeah. We'll be wearing them. Well, I want to thank you, Greg, Veronica, and Amy for joining us on KBOO. It's been really informative, and hopefully people listen to this and hear your plight and come to your rallies and write in support. Thank you to Jamie Partridge for helping us convert this to a radio-ready file. Thank you, audience, for tuning in tonight. Thank you, Stephen. This is Rachel Haynes. You've been listening to Labor Radio. Tune in next Monday and every Monday at 6 p.m. to catch another.
You're listening to Community Radio. KBOO, Portland.
For nearly two decades, communities across the Pacific Northwest have been fighting off multiple efforts to turn the region into a fossil fuel export hub. On the next episode of Locus Focus, we'll look back at the successes of what Eric DePlace with Sightline Institute calls the Thin Green Line. Tune in Monday, April 19th at 10 a.m. when we talk with Eric and Lummi Nation member Jay Julius about how far a powerful alliance of Northwest tribes, climate activists, and community members have come in stopping most of these proposals. And what are the next steps to reinforce the Thin Green Line? That's Monday, April 19th at 10 a.m. on your community radio station, KBOO.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel? When everything goes wrong, you see some bad. But I'm just
just a soul whose intentions are good. Oh Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
Produced at the studios of KBOO Radio in Portland, Oregon, this is Prison Pipeline. I'm Doug McVeigh. A reminder, KBOO is in the middle of our spring membership drive. KBOO's commercial-free, volunteer-powered radio, made possible by people like you. Help us reach our $60,000 fundraising goal. Just go to kboo.fm/give.